back to the office, or okay, stuff, right? And for people like Ward, who have been not only very outspoken, consistent critics of the U.S. government's foreign policy and U.S. government's domestic policy, and we say we've done it in terms of, the failure of the government to comply with law, but nonetheless, he's been a critic and he's also been politically active with very high rates. You do that, there's people out there who are happy to criticize you, especially when it's open season and they bear no consequences for anything they want to say. So what we've seen is this whole range of allegations. The sources of these allegations are never checked. If they were checked, they'd see that most of them, a huge proportion of them, all tie back to a very small handful of people who've been saying this stuff for 15 or 20 years and have generally been discredited. But now it's under threat. The media is not examining your sources. They're not looking at it critically. They're not looking at the battery of well-respected eminent scholars who actually know something about these fields, who have consistently and continue to praise more scholarship and more. But that doesn't matter. It's a media game. And so, by opening this investigation period up to completely unrestricted and disreputable media practices, I think, sure, they can actually come up. I think it's sort of interesting that these were the only things they managed to come up with. They were scraping real hard. But this is what they managed to come up with. And now, somehow, this is a legitimate subject of academic review, right? You turn it over to this committee. This is somehow a legitimate process. And I think it's really, really important to keep in mind the fact that this started from a disagreement or a dislike or a desire to squash a voice with this grainy, significant issues of political dissent. And now it has suddenly again changed into, well, of course you can say whatever you want. What's the message that's really going out there to all the rest of us who say things that are critical of government policies or otherwise, perhaps, at least in mainstream media, unpopular views? The message is, of course you're free to say, but your personal life can be put under the microscope and it can be shredded. And you can be attacked on all manner of basis, and that there doesn't have to be any support for or backup for those allegations. We can just go after you, and we won't fire you because of what you said. We just get to go around and figure out any old thing that we want to go and attack you for and fire you for. I don't find that like a particularly comforting position to be taken, and I think it's a really dangerous one that we may be letting slide. I think that, but as Ward said, there's been tremendous support from academic communities around the country and others as well up until this point. And I think this is a role that was moved by the university to try to cut that off, to give people sort of a free pass. Well, phew, academic freedom is fine. It's fine to go after people and anything else you can grab up, but we don't have to be responsible then because we've stood up for academic freedom. And I just want to say a couple of things. One is that I think if you look at the pattern of the attacks that have progressed over the last 2 months, it is a classic disinformation campaign. Okay? And we don't have time to go through the details of that, but if you just look at what was said about that 9/11 piece, first of all, what were actually said in that 9/11 piece was turned upside down. Right? He was saying he was not advocating defending the attacks. He said, if U.S. policy, has these kinds of results, result in the death and devastation of people, their children, their communities around the world, this is going to be the result. If we don't want these kinds of attacks, maybe we should look at the causes. Now, that's, first of all, he's got to turn that around and say, he's advocating that, urging people to engage in those kinds of attacks, whatever. That kind of crumbled, right, when people started actually reading the report. So then they come to, he incites other people's violence. He incites the students to violence. And they play these little clips that were taken from a surreptitiously taped meeting. They take them completely out of context. And again, they use the same opposite of what he was saying, which was he was not, telling young people to go out and wall buildings or whatever. He was saying, essentially, go work within the institution, work within the system. That's where you've got the skills and talents to go make change. So they tried that, right? Then that didn't really fly, when the whole context came out. And so then they tried to do validation of, maybe he didn't really say all that, but see, this person went violent back. Right? You see this, you know, attempt, 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 and all of those accusations are, you know, unsubstantiated, previously unreported for the most part. I mean, it's this clear line of if one version of this story doesn't work, then we just move to the next one. We get increasingly personal and, you know, throw enough stuff and maybe something will stick. And that's also pretty much what's happened along the actual academic life, right? When it started coming out, they've written, you know, 20-some books and more than 100 articles and however many dozens of book chapters, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, we don't really want to take on that whole body of scholarship, so let's see if we can't dig up a few people who have other interpretations of particular historical facts or disagreements over certain books. These are things that happen, you know, all the time in academia. You know, they're not usually made the basis for, you know, 2 months worth of journal writing. And so we see, as I said, if you start putting these pieces together, it's a very classic pattern of trying to discredit somebody, trying to neutralize them by destroying their reputation, their credibility, at the same time sort of doing this tap dance around the academic freedom thing. And finally, the last point I just wanted to make is, in this process, one of the reasons it has worked as well as it has, I think one of the reasons that as many people going along with it, sort of sitting back and watching it, is because of this allegation of identity. And more broadly, I think it's because there's been this incredible tapping into a kind of racism that we don't really talk about, we don't acknowledge, but that facilitates this process of movement from actual substantive critique into nasty personal attacks. I think that the racism involved here is really facilitating that, and I think that we really need to take that seriously. On the one hand, what we have seen are incredible barrages of the most virulent anti-Indian racism you can imagine. You know, of course, one of the ethnic studies department is also under attack, and one of my little pet projects when I go back is to put out a little brochure that says, why we need ethnic studies, we just publish, you know, a small fraction of these emails, because they are unbelievable. They also center around the theme of, gee, we should have killed you all, Trivington should have finished the job. But, you know, with lots of real ugly, unrepeatable adjectives thrown in. There's that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, there's a play not really an Indian, right? And all of these allegations stem from, again, a small handful of people who have been saying this and have been discredited for years. But now all of a sudden, they are given credibility in the national media and even by the university itself, apparently, even though the university has, you know, more than it's been looking at since 1978. All of a sudden, it becomes critical, right? For a community of presumably white folks, and most of the people who have been raising this criticism have been white folks who know nothing about war, who know nothing about the history of American Indian identity, who know nothing about the federal laws that deal with determination of identity. And there's an attempt to literally strip him of his identity. I mean, if you know anything about the history of race and racial classifications in this country and the determination of Indian identity, that has been one of the primary purposes of federal law, to make the Indians go away. You know, let's, as the boarding school philosophy was, kill the Indian, save the man. You know, get rid of the Indian in the word Churchill, and he won't be the word Churchill anymore, and then nobody will listen to him. And that, you know, perfectly consistent with the history of the imposition of identity of American Indian people. But somehow that seems like that's okay. And I keep saying this in an academic environment, we should be particularly concerned about that, because allowing the level of racism that's been involved in this process to go forward uncalled out, you know, without calling out, without checking, I think this gives a whole nice tool to this general attempt at current academia that masks the real content issues and substance issues and allows a certain kind of, you know, completely undue process to sort of ride by with the thought that, you know, well, I don't have identity issues, right? I mean, the truth is, they're going to really investigate war's identity in the way they're planning to research misconduct committee is going to do it, you know, this is going to be real interesting, you know? I mean, I checked the Asian American box or whatever on there. I don't even want an Asian American. I don't even know, I'm not just saying that because I want credibility for my writing on Japanese American internment. It sounds a lot better than being Japanese American. You know, out there in a lot of land, the word is that word's not an Indian, but his weight definitely is. But if the institution is going to officially take this on as its task, it's going to be really interesting. Anyway, we'll just have to see how that goes. But I think it's really important for us to see the patterns and not to fall for the classic kind of basic switch tactics that are being used here. Thank you.
What were the real reasons? They can imagine how important Fort Monty is being released to them. But the military industrial complex has a lot to do with our so-called everyday life in the country. And the kind of forces that we must fight against. This is going on right now. Okay? It's important to understand also that the black wing of this country is not only so well organized, but even more importantly, so well funded. It has been very, very effective in identifying those of us who speak truth to power. If Ward Churchill was not doing that, he would not be in the situation he is now. I've been there. I am a victim of the FBI counterintelligence program. I was faced with 66 years in prison in 1968 for the crime, in quote, of organizing nonviolent protests against racism in the popular schools of East Los Angeles. I was only a young scholar, and I was not yet, quote, a notorious professor emeritus at Berkeley. Now, those of you who have more white hair than I do in the audience, remember McCarthy, right? You know what happened then? If you have to attack and speak out against the government, you are ipso facto a communist. Whether you are a part-time member or not of the Communist Party. Now, the piggyback, you know, is calling those of us, or has people calling those of us, who continue to speak for the power, either terrorists or terrorist sympathizers in terror. Okay? Now, the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, whom the governor of Colorado, I think, is in liberty to extend, okay, is a, as Ward has mentioned, part of the Cheney Foundation process. There's another organization of whom we have well-represented individuals here called the National Association of Scholars. The same people on our faculty here who have been attacking those of us in ethnic studies since the time we emerged on this university campus back in 1969. They're also responsible for the attack on world churches. Then there is the Students for Academic Freedom, talking about misnomers, or oxymorons, I don't know, a better way to put it. They're very well organized, here and everywhere else. So the attack on Ward Churchill represents an attack on ethnic studies as a whole, women's studies now, and probably black studies soon, Asian American studies soon. But it's also an attack on the academy as a whole. Because we're part of this academy, whether some people out there not resist it. And whether some people out there not, our scholarship collectively has contributed to making the academy a much more meaningful enterprise in this nation of ours.
Not
that much. Okay? And the work of the scholarship are people like Ward Churchill, Lin Chi Wong, Ron Kataki, Michael Barrera, those are my two. Okay? Roman Alcor, Laura Perez, Barbara Christian, Jim Jordan, and Chris McKean, and I know they're here with me today, very angry, they're here in spirit. They always join us for all kinds of unspoken out there like this, you know, too. Looking for our collective scholarship, you all simply look at my list. What if you want to know anything about sexuality? We know anything about gender, patriarchy. You know, it was those of us in ethnic studies who were the first ones who began to, you know, speak truth to power in our scholarship. Now, what's going on in Georgia, as an example, is important about it, and you know about this problem. The state legislature there has passed, right, the legislation, designed to police the university curriculum and the conflict of professors teaching research in public activity. An international well-known scholar by the name of Tariq Ramadan at Notre Dame University was denied an appointment at the University by the Immigration and National Security Service. There is right now a bill before the House of Representatives, number 6-3077, that if passed, would create an international advisory board that, according to the memorandum of the Coalition of International Education, allows for, quote, federal intervention in the conduct and content of international studies programs. Okay? That's going on right now. So, I think it's very important to place what's going on in Colorado and what's going on with Professor Ward Churchill in the context that I speak of. It's not just an isolated issue of case, because it's very, very serious implications and ramifications to the very future of our nation as a quote, limited democracy. The limit because, you know, there's no reality. As long as two fight dictatorship in this country, as long as we have a process in the political system that is controlled by the filthy rich, the international corporations, we have a limited democracy. And that limited democracy will bring in more than that. In conclusion, when the issue first happened in Colorado, Professor David Pettles and I, calling it Mrs. Mondale, cooperated petition. It was circulated nationwide, and in a period of a week, we got 230 signatures in support. The volunteer candidate, and this is what we conclude, that academic freedom is essential for debate to be heard from all points of view, so that the facts and data marshaled for both the arguments and counterarguments can be prepared. They must be reminded that in order to have any hope of maintaining the respect of the world community, to say nothing of the judgment for future generations of Americans, we must mark steadfastly against the desire to turn our most basic freedom in this time. This applies most especially to those of us who may wish to exercise dissent, whether it be in a town square, in a public hearing, in a place of worship, on the airways, or in our nation's center of higher education, the university. Many human science university scholars have dedicated our lives to education, to our teaching, writing, and service, and it's critical in creating and sustaining the practice of science. And therefore, issue an urgent reminder to those who would threat on the right to academic freedom that the very nation is ready to shelter from controversial expressions of opinion by some citizens is most at risk when we fail to also protect the right of those citizens.
Thank you very much for those titles in the office. We've been doing that for an hour and 10 minutes, but we still have about 35 minutes of question and answer on the floor. So those of you who are interested in raising questions, please line up here in front. But before I go to the floor,
I would like to proceed with any other comments we may need at this time of affairs. Not in the coordinator of the floor. And please identify yourself first, and then try to limit your comments to as brief as possible.